We're going to learn Daf Tezayin in Masechtas Ketubos. However, we're going to start from the bottom of Tezvav Amaveis at the Mishnah, which is the beginning of the second parak. So we're going to start with the Mishnah, the beginning of the second parak, on the bottom of Tezvav Amaveis. Zok the Mishnah. Ha'isha shenes armalo oy shenes garsho. So you have a woman at the time, she's now getting divorced or her husband dies, so now it's time for her to collect her ksuba, and it's clear that there is no ksuba over here to identify whether she was a basula at the time that they got married. He marries basula nesesi, isatani. She says, yes, I was a basula at the time we got married, and therefore you owe me the full ksuba of 200. But who I married loiki ela almana nesaticha. He says, no, it's not true. When we got married, you were already an almana, was already a second marriage, and I only owe you 100. So that's the pashtus, that they're arguing simply over whether she's an almana or a basula, whether she's a basula or not, whether he has to pay her the full ksuba. On the original marriage, yeah. Now he's either dead or divorcing her. Now, if it's him divorcing her, obviously he's the one that's making these arguments. If he died, it's the Yorshim that are making these arguments. Right. So the Yorshim don't want to pay because this is money out of their pocket. So they don't want to pay. Now, so how do we determine whether who's right? So im yesh edim sheyatza behinuma. If there are edim that she left with a hinuma, the Gemara is going to explain exactly what the hinuma is. It's a type of hat or pin. Veroisha perua. And now the question is, it's whether it's and or either or her hair was uncovered. So a lot, it's interesting, the Mefarshim really are troubled by this, why her hair was uncovered if she was already an Arusa, if she was engaged. So apparently, even if her hair was covered, by the Chasana, they would uncover some of the hair. That's what most of the Mefarshim say.
My wife's quite interested. I think she would have shaved much more.
In each of those cases, Ksubasa Masayim, then you could say that she was obviously a Basula at the time, and therefore her Ksuba is 200. In other words, we're bringing evidence. We're bringing proof that she was a Ksuba, that she was a Basula. And that's why she's able to collect the 200. Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika argues, and he says a slightly different case. It's interesting what exactly they're arguing about. He says, Af chiluk kloyos raya. Even distributing these roasted kernels of grain or oats, whatever it was, they used to dry them out and make them sweet, and they were like candies. They would hand those out to the little kids. That would also be evidence. So I saw that, what's the machlekes between Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika and the Tanakhama? Because they're all basically saying the same thing. They're just giving different signs. So the difference is that, first of all, whether this is something that she herself did, in other words, whether her hair was covered, versus giving out the candies is something that they did with other people, that's not really evidence about her. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika is actually being more makel, because it could be that in some cases kids are used to going to weddings, so they get these candies, even if it turns out that she's really not a basula, because the kids anticipated and they want it. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika is a very big chiddush when he says, no, you could look at the evidence of what the kids got as evidence about whether or not the girl, the kala, was a basula. Anyway, okay, just so that something to keep in the back of your mind. Now, the next half of the Mishnah says, Umayda Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua also agrees. We'll see what Rabbi Yeshua is, who he's talking to, and what this is going on. But Omer lechaveiroi soda zu shel avicha hoisa. He comes over to some random guy and says, by the way, the house that I'm living in used to belong to your father, and I bought it, and now it's mine. So in that case, Shehu Nemon, he's going to be believed that the field now belongs to him. Why? As the Mishnah itself says on the top of Tezayin Abed Aleph, Shahapesha Osir Hu Hapesha Hitter. The only information that we have that would have made it Osir, which is saying that it belonged to your father, that is the same person and the same story that's saying that it doesn't belong to your father. So the only way we have any evidence of what happened at all is based on this guy. So since he's the guy who's supplying the story, so now he gets to tell the full story, and he gets to keep the field. Oh. But on the flip side is, if there are already witnesses or there's some evidence that this field originally belonged to the person, to the father of the person you're talking to, and he just randomly says, oh yeah, by the way, I bought this from you and now it's mine, he's not going to be believed just on his say-so. So it all depends on where the beginning of the story starts. If he's coming in the middle of the story, his random opinion that it belongs to him is not going to be enough. But if he is supplying the full story from the beginning till the end, then we do say this concept of Pesha Asa Pesha Hiter, which is, as we'll see in the Gemara, is a expanded or enhanced version of a Migu, and in this context we're going to believe them. Okay, so let's go back to the Gemara. Let's start with the Gemara over here now to talk about what the first topic is. Taimo de Ika Edim. So in the Mishnah we said that if there is Edim, then we're going to believe her that she's a Psula and she's going to be able to collect. But very obvious, Halekal Edim. But if there's no proof one way or the other, Baal Mehemin. So then, if so, the husband is going to be believed. What does that mean? That the husband's believed to say that she was not a Psula, and therefore he does not have to pay her the full ksuba. So if so, lematanan stama deloike Rebbe Gamliel. That means our Mishnah is just obviously holding not like Rebbe Gamliel. And that would mean, by the way, why is it relevant to call it a stam not like Rebbe Gamliel? Because we know the rule is throughout Shas that machloikas v'achar kach stam. If first you have a Mishnah that brings the machloikas, and then later on in the Masechta, the Mishnah, we bring a Mishnah that holds like one Shita and not like the other Shita, that means the Mishnayas are paskening like the Shita that we're bringing later. That's called machloikas v'achar kach stam. If you have a stam Mishnah after a machlekes, so since we've had our machlekes Rabbi Shua and Rabbi Gamliel in the previous parak, and now all of a sudden the Mishnah is going clearly with Rabbi Gamliel Shita, not like with Rabbi Shua Shita rather, so we see that it must be that not our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Gamliel. As the Gemara itself says, the E Rabbi Gamliel, because if we were following Rabbi Gamliel Shita, Ha'amar Ihi Mehemna. Right. Rabbi Gamliel always says, whenever there's a discrepancy between the husband and the wife, and it's a matter of whether or not she's going to have to pay the ksuba, we usually follow the wife's opinion and we make him pay the ksuba. That's been Rabbi Gamliel's shita consistently until now, all the different cases. So it seems like our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Gamliel. The Gemara says, no. Afilu tamei Rabbi Gamliel. You could say that our Mishnah follows Rabbi Gamliel's opinion. The difference is, ad kam lo kama Rabbi Gamliel hasam. In all those other cases, Rabbi Gamliel was saying his opinion, because in all of those cases, the husband was unsure of the story. Only she knew the real story, so we believed her. And that's why her story was that strong that she was even able to be mighty. But over here, where both of them actually were there, and they themselves witnessed or experienced what happened, so they're able to say that I am just as clear as you, and you're a mighty mechavera, we're going to believe the husband. So therefore, even Rabbi Gamliel in this case would admit that we can follow the husband's opinion and not require that he pays the ksuba. So the Gemara says, "Vitakarile," when you said that it wasn't Rabbi Gamliel, my karile, what were you saying? It was this chilik between Rabbi Gamliel in this case and all the other cases is so obvious. What were you thinking to make the comparison in the first place? Habariu barihu. Over here, it's a whole different category of case. It's a bari and bari. All the other cases that Rabbi Gamliel discussed were a bari and a shema. We're a different type of case. And that's why Rabbi Gamliel was following the bari. So what was the havamina? The Gemara says, kiven deroiv noshim besulisnis. So since the reality is that most women, or most chasanas that we go to, most chasanas that we see, the girl, the kala, is a besula. Ki bari b'shem adami. Maybe that roiv, it's such a strong roiv, brings you up to the category of making his version to claim that she was not a besula. Without evidence, by the way. He's just making that claim. And without evidence, you want to believe him against the roiv that kalas are almost always a besula. So that you might think that makes him back a lower level to a Shema, and therefore we could compare the two cases, and that's why we have to say a Chiddush. No. Over here also, Lamaisa, even against that Rav, he is a Bari. He was there, he witnessed as himself, and therefore he's able to make a claim that I know for a fact that she's not a Basula, and we're able to believe him. Okay, so again, it comes out at this point, we're saying that our Mishnah could be Rabbi Gamliel. And it makes sense to say that our Mishnah is Rabbi Gamliel. We're actually going to try to prove now that we actually think it is Rabbi Gamliel that is saying this case of the Mishnah. Why? Since the next half of the Mishnah says, now Rabbi Yeshua is responding and says, oh, and by the way, Rabbi Yeshua agrees in this case. So, in the field case. So, Rabbi Gamliel, b'moida, if Rabbi Gamliel was actually admitting to Rabbi Yeshua in the first half of the Mishnah and saying, until now I always believed the wife and now I'm believing the husband, so Rabbi Gamliel now is flipping his script and saying, I believe the husband, so shaper, so it makes sense that Rabbi Yeshua says, oh, by the way, I also flipped the script, I'm responding to you, just like you admit to me in one case, I'll admit to you in another case. So Ela Iamrit Layari Rabbi Gamliel b'moida, but if Rabbi Gamliel is not the Tana of our Mishnah, the beginning of our Mishnah, and he's not the one who's saying, I'll agree to you, Rabbi Yeshua Laman Maida. So then Rabbi Yeshua's response doesn't make any sense. The second half doesn't fit. Where all of a sudden, out of the blue, Rabbi Yeshua is being Maida to something that we're not talking about. So it makes more sense to say that it is Rabbi Gamliel, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua is responding to Rabbi Gamliel. That's what the Gemara wants to try to use as a proof. So the Gemara says, it's not a proof. I'll tell you why. Mi sabes Rabbi Yeshua hai pirkei kai. You're assuming that Rabbi Yeshua is, by this moida, is responding to the sentence immediately prior to where we state this in the Mishnah. So if he's responding, if it's one sentence to the next, so then Anachanami, we have to say that Rabbi Yeshua is responding to what Rabbi Gamliel said. But really, that's not true. Who says we're talking about what we just discussed in this parak? Amigu koi, va'pirkin kamoi koi. He's really going on the whole concept of migu, and the whole concept of migu of when they could have, where she makes an argument, it's not the best argument, but she has even a better argument, that we apply the concept of migu or not. That's where Rabbi Yeshua is saying. In other words, Rabbi Yeshua is saying, in general, I do not use the concept of migu, because remember, Rabbi Yeshua is the one who says, we don't believe her. So even though she's coming up with an argument, and she could have even had potentially a better argument, and Rabbi Yeshua said, I don't believe her, here, in this case, in this Pesha Hitter case, which is, as I said, is a subcategory of migu, in this case, I will admit to you that in this case we do apply the migu, we do say Pesha Asa Pesha Hitter, and we say that we're going to believe this person is presenting the story. Okay, so it comes out, right, so we don't have a raya. You could say what you wanted to say, but we don't have a proof that it was really Rabbi Gamliel necessarily and Rabbi Yeshua was admitting, because Rabbi Yeshua could be going on the first parak. So the Gemara wants to know, if we want to say that Rabbi Yeshua is responding to a Mishnah that we had in the first parak, ahai. On which case exactly is Rabbi Yeshua changing and saying it's a little bit different? If you want to say on the first case, remember this case, now we're going to go through all the various cases, all the various Mishnayos that we had in the first part. If you want to say it's going on the case where she's already pregnant and we're asking her, where did this child come from? And her response is, and her response is that she's a good guy, that he's a good guy and he's kosher. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Gamliel there said she is believed. Rabbi Yeshua, and Rabbi Yeshua says, no, we don't believe her. And that's, so we see that Rabbi Yeshua says, we don't trust the migu. It says, Hasa my migu iku. Over there, that really has nothing to do with the case of migu. Because Hare Kresa ben Shineha, she can't really make any argument that nothing happened. She's already pregnant. That case is, she's already pregnant. So she can't say, oh, I could have said nothing happened and I agreed. You can't say anything. So that can't be the case of migu. There's no migu there. Elaha. So rather, here's the case of migu that Rabbi Shu is going on. Ra'u mida beres im echod. You saw her just talking. So we'll see. And we asked her what happened with that guy, and she says, "Ish plain of a kohen who, don't worry, he's a kosher guy." And of course, the same thing. Rabbi Gamliel says, "We do believe her." Rabbi Yeshua says, "We don't believe her." Oh, so here you could say there's a migu, right? So over here you could say a migu because she could have said nothing happened. Instead, she said he's kosher. So the Gemara again says, "Hasam my migu iku." Over there also, what is really the migu? That depends on how you explain how we interpreted the Mishnah itself. If you interpreted originally the Mishnah like Zeiri Damar my midabaris nistera, that all we saw is her go separate off with the guy, but we didn't really see anything. We don't really know what happened. And she volunteers and says, "I lived with him, but he's okay." So then she has a migu because she could have said nothing ever happened. Okay, so that makes a sense. That makes sense that we're talking about a migu. Because she could have said, I have a migu, because I could have said nothing happened at all. And she's admitting that she did bia. So Mehemna, and therefore we believe her because, or Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her anyway, we believe her because she has a migu. When she says yes, he was kosher, we could believe her because she could have said nothing happened. That works only according to Ze'iri, where we don't have any evidence that anything actually happened. El the Rav Ashi Damer, my midaberes neveles. But according to Rav Ashi, that says that there, we saw something happened, so she can't say, she no longer has the argument, I could have said nothing happened. So my migu ika, so once again, that case is not really a case of migu. According to Rav Ashi's interpretation of the Mishnah, and we have to accept, because we do accept that Rav Ashi is one of the explanations of the Mishnah, that means that's not the case, according to Rav Ashi anyway, for sure, that's not the case that Rabbi Yeshua is saying, oh, I didn't mean that case. So it's not that case in Medaberes. Ve'elo aho. So fine. So now you want to say that Rabbi Yeshua is retracting from the following Mishnah. He aimeres mukas eitzani, v'hu aimer loyki ela jerusas ish'at. The case in the Mishnah where they're arguing about how she lost her besulim. And she's saying that I was a mukas eitz. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, aimer ne'emenes. Once again, she's believed to say that it was a mukas eitz. Rabbi Yeshua aimer loy mipin anuchayin. No, we don't believe what she says. And therefore we'll consider it a jerusas ish, that it happened with a man. And therefore she loses her besulim. Okay, once again, Hosa my migu iko. Once again, what is really, in fact, the migu that you're saying that Rabbi Gamliel is believing her because she has a migu? Bishlaimel Rabbi Eliezer da Amar b'mana b'loy klum. So according to Rabbi Lozer, says that they're arguing about whether it's 100 or 0 because it's a mekach tois, or she's still, it's not a mekach tois, so she's a mukas eitz. Migu di boy Amar mukas eitz ani tachtecha. She has a migu because she could say, I am a mukas eitz, and therefore I still deserve my ksuba. But you should know, by the way, I'm only a mukas eitz since yesterday. When we got engaged and when the ksuba amount was established, I was really 100% and I deserve the full amount. Okay, I'm asking I only get 100 today because I am in fact a mukas eitz, but the reality is I could have made an argument that would have garnered for me 100% of the money. The is la masayim. So now she's going for an argument. She's admitting that she only deserves 100 because she's saying I am a mukas eitz and I drop to 100. But I could have made an argument that would have gotten me 200. In other words, I have a better argument in my back pocket that I could have used, and that is the concept of a migu. And she now is admitting and saying, no, I'll agree that I only get 100. It's not a mekach tois, it's not a drusas ish, but I agree that I only get 100. So once again, that's enhancing her argument with the argument of a migu. Mehemno, so we believe her. So that works according to Rebbe Lozer, who said that they're arguing about 100 or 0, so that the 100 is a half point, and she could have made an argument to get her 200. Ela Rabbi Yochanan, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, says that even in this case, they were arguing about whether she deserves the full 200, the 200, meaning the argument between Rameir and Rabbi and the Rabbanon, that she, if she's a mukas eitz, she even then she gets 200. My migu ika. So there's no migu. There is no better argument for her to make. The fact that she says that it happened after we're engaged versus it happening before we were engaged really is not a better argument on any scale, because she's still getting the same 200. There's no difference between the first version of her story and the second, or the better version of her story. So there, again, that once again is not a case of a migu. It's not halachically based on a migu that Rabbi Yeshua is saying, that migu I don't believe, but this migu I do believe. It's not, there's nothing for Rabbi Yeshua to retract. Ella, so finally the Gemara says, aha, it's this case. So we're going back to the regular case where a guy gets married simply and she is not a basula. So her argument is, well, you're right, tonight I'm not a basula, but I was a basula when we got engaged, and it's your fault, it's your mazel that it caused me that I'm not a basula today. And he says, no, what happened was you lost your basula before we even got engaged, and at the time we already got engaged, you were a fraud. You were telling me you were a basula, and you really weren't. And that's where Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Lozer, I'm an amen. says, Rabbi Gamliel says she is believed, because again, she knows what happened. Rabbi Yeshua says, no, we don't believe her. Now, over here, the migu di iboya amra mukaseitza nitachtecha. Over here, she definitely has a better argument. When she's arguing about when it happened, it's not only when it happened, she could have also argued about what happened. She could have argued and said, I was a mukaseitz. Deloy kaposla nafsha mikahuna. And now, that's a better argument. So I have a two-stage argument. A, when it happened. And I could have even argued that, even if you don't want to argue about when it happened, I could clarify and say that I'm a mukaseitz, and I could say what happened, and that's a better argument because it makes me more available. It makes me more kosher. Okay, the Kamar Nanasti, and now she's admitting that it did happen with a person, the Kaposla Anafshami Kahuna, so she's giving the second class argument instead of the first class argument. That's where the case is that Rabbi Gamliel says, oh, so since she gave a second class, she used the concept of Migu, that she gave us a second argument instead of the first argument, so Rabbi Gamliel says, oh, obviously she's telling the truth. And that's where Rabbi Yeshua said his case. In that Migu, I don't believe you. But in this type of Migu, where I'm supplying the entire story from beginning to end, this type of Migu, I will admit to you that I the concept of Migu applies. So I don't argue on the concept of Migu in its entirety. In your case, where she could have had a better argument, but we don't really know that she could have. She's saying, if I wanted a lie, I could have made a better lie. So I say no. If she wanted a lie, she would have lied. So obviously, this is what happened, and we don't believe her at all. In this case, by Pesha Asaf Hashayit, by the case of the field, if I wanted a lie, I just could have kept my mouth shut. I didn't have to say anything. It's not a matter of, I have to say, and it's a better argument, not a better argument. I didn't have to say anything. The fact that I'm saying something, obviously my story is completely true. That's where Rabbi Yeshua admits that the Migu works. Bahu Migu, right, sorry. The Hacham Adina Lucha, Bahu Migu. Over here, I'm admitting to you this Migu works. Over there, I argue on you. Over here, I'm not going to argue. Okay, so that is the conclusion of the Gemara, that Rabbi Yeshua, or at least the one explanation of the Mishnah, we're able to say that Rabbi Yeshua really is going on the first parak, and he's saying, if you want to know about Migu, I'll tell you that Migu like this, where I'm supplying everything, where I could have kept quiet, that kind of Migu works. But a Migu that I have to respond, and you just don't like my version of the story, so then I don't admit that the Migu should work. Okay. So now, so it comes out that Rabbi Yeshua says, sometimes I say Migu and sometimes I don't say Migu. So the Gemara asks, Michti, Hai Migu v'Hai Migu. Maishna Hai Migu me'Hai Migu. So this is a Migu and they're both Migus, right? Where at least, again, I know the Mishnah uses the word Pesha Asa Pesha Itter, it sounds different. But Lamaisa, they're both a Migu. They're both, I could have said it in a better way, right? They're both, so the concept of Migu applies. So if they're both Migus, how come Rabbi Yeshua flips the script? How come sometimes he agrees to the concept of Migu and sometimes he doesn't? So the Gemara gives a mashal. Hacha ein shar shachet lefanecha. Over here, in this case, there's no shechted shar. Hasam hare shar shachet lefanecha. Over there is a shar that's already been shechted. So obviously that's a mashal, because we're not talking about shechting over here. But what it means to say is like this. Where you already have, the way Rashi learns is as follows. Where you already have a circumstance that needs explanation, it's already too late. If you're already playing defense, it's too late to use a migu. That's basically what it says. Shachar shachar lefanecha means the circumstances that need explanation are already in front of you. Whereas in the case over here, there's no story. Nobody had to talk about anything. This is the way Rashi emphasizes the fact that I could have kept quiet. I could have said nothing. If I said nothing, I wouldn't need to give an explanation. Life would just carry on the way it is. So when when we don't have a situation, and I present the situation, then I get a migu because I can present the full story from beginning to end. Whereas where I already have a situation that needs explanation, then give the best explanation. And we don't use, this is a goal, obviously according to Rabbi Yeshua, the way Rabbi Yeshua explains. Rabbi Yeshua is saying, I'm not buying the fact that I could have said a better explanation. No, if this is your version of the story, then that's what we're going to take, and we're not going to look at the fact that I could have said something else. If you're going to lie, then lie. If you're not going to lie, then this is what what really happened. And therefore, once you're in a situation already, give your explanation, and that's what we're going to take, and we're not going to build up your explanation, as Rashi says, because who says he would have thought of the better argument? So we should make what he's saying all of a sudden better, because he could have, maybe he would have thought of a better argument? We don't have to believe that. And therefore, we don't accept his version of the story. Okay. So fine, let's go back now to the beginning. So that takes us again to the fact that when Rabbi Yeshua says amigu, when Rabbi Yeshua doesn't say amigu, and whether or not Rabbi Yeshua is responding to this part of the Mishnah or to the other parak. So now let's go back to figure out why it is that when we have Edim, we believe her. Or rather the other way around. When we don't have Edim, we believe him. Why do we believe him? The Kivon, the Roiv Noshim Besulois Nisois, and what we said was, the Chiddush, remember we said that the Chiddush of Rabbi Gamliel was, the reason why this case was different was because Roiv, most women, when they get married, are Besula, so therefore, there's an expectation that she is a Besula. So if that's true, the Kivon, the Roiv Noshim Besulois Nisois, if it's true that most women, when they get married, are in fact a Besula, so it sounds like her argument is the better argument, Kiloi also Edim. What difference does it make if we don't have proof? Our Mishnah says we only rely on it if she has proof. Why do we need proof? Amaravina, so Ravina answers, Mishum de Ikala Meimar. I'll tell you why. It's not enough to just rely on the Roiv. You actually need proof. Because the real story is like this. Mishum de Ikala Meimar, Roiv Nashim Basulas Nissus. I'll agree. Most girls, when they get married, are a Basul. Umi et Amonis. But there is a small percentage of second marriages that she's an Amona. But, Vechol Hanisa is Basula, but when you get married to a Basula, Yeshla Kol. There is a rumor that people are talking. People talk about whether she was a Basula or not. The zoo, and in this case, now I'm on the top of Tazayin on my base, the zoo, Hoyle, the Ein La Kol. And this girl, since we don't remember, nobody seems to remember whether or not she was a Basula. Remember, they were talking about a case where no Edom showed up. Where no Edom showed up. That's our case. That's the case that we're talking about. Because our Mishnah is talking about a case that there were Edom. And we're talking about a case that there weren't Edom. So no Edom showed up. Isra lo ruba. So obviously that wasn't the story. Because since whenever a girl gets married as a Basula, everybody knows and everybody talks about it. So therefore, the fact that no one's talking about it is evidence that it must not have been the case. So therefore, your roiv is no good. So that's why, Anachanami, you're right, even against a roiv. But this is not a good roiv, because if you were going with the roiv, there would be evidence like the roiv. So the Gemara says, one second. E kol hanisa es besula yeshla kol. If that's true, the way you phrased it was, every girl who is a besula has a rumor. Ki also edim mayhave. So then, even if edim do come, the edim are going against Hanach Saadi Shikri Ninu. So then these Edom are lying. Because you just told me 2 seconds ago that every girl that is a Basula has a rumor. So where's the rumor? Must be the fact that there is no rumor. That itself is proof and evidence that she was not a Basula. So when Edom showed up, why are we even believing them anymore? They're going against the proof. They're going against the evidence that there's no coat. So the Gemara says, you're right, I didn't phrase it correctly. Elo Amar Ravina, what Ravina meant to say is like this. Roiv Hanisas Basula Yesh Lokol. Not every single girl. Sometimes, for whatever reason, people aren't talking, but most, almost everybody, when they marry a Basula, there is a version. So it's possible that it didn't happen. The zoo, Halva Ein Lokol, but over there, again, since it should have, under normal circumstances, we should have been hearing rumors, and this girl doesn't have Israel Lo Ruba, so the Roiv is not so great. But if Edom come and say, yeah, she's the exception to the rule. She, like every rule, right, every rule is meant to be broken, so she's the exception to the rule. Even though she was a Basula, she was that one in a hundred chance that we didn't talk about it. For whatever reason. You know, there can be a million reasons why it didn't happen. So therefore, now it's possible for Edom to come and testify and say, yes, she really was a Basula. There was no call. Okay, it happens. Sometimes it happens that nobody was talking about it, but really she was a Basula and we can prove it to you. So that's why. But the Chiddush is that even, that we, and that's why without Edom, we're gonna say we can't really trust what happened over here because there's a certain expectation. The expectation is that if we don't know one way or the other, we should remember what the rumors were. And the fact that we don't have any rumors is a raya that if she's not part of that majority that she was necessarily a basula. Now we're going to go to the next topic. So then we start talking about what the Edim are. Okay, whatever. Actually, that's not the part of the mission that we're going to really be focused on. But we say here that it's possible if she does bring proof, then she's able to collect her ksuba. She's able to collect the full ksuba of 200. Now, obviously, as we mentioned when we learned the Mishnah, we're talking about where there is no ksuba in hand. Because if she presents the ksuba, then we just read the ksuba, read what it says. The ksuba either says 200 or 100. That's how you write a ksuba. So obviously we're talking about over here where there is no actual shtar. There's no contract, there's no physical evidence of whether she's a basula or not. So then, if so, maybe, since it's just a matter of her word, maybe she'll come and bring proof in one bezdin, and she'll collect her ksuba. And then, she'll pull out the ksuba later, and say that, she'll pull out the ksuba later and say, oh, look at that, I found my ksuba. Oh, and obviously, if I have my ksuba, that means I haven't been paid yet. So I'll go to one bezdin in New York, and then I'll go to another bezdin in India someplace, where they never heard of anybody, and she'll be able to collect her ksuba a second time. So what's to stop her from collecting, if we're based on, in our Mishnah, based on just her word, what's to stop her from collecting the ksuba, presenting the ksuba second, in a second situation, and collecting a second time? So Amar Rav Avuha, says, Zoy Soymeres, by the fact that we're not concerned that she'll present it a second time, must be Koisvin Shoiver. What's gonna happen is that when she gets paid, we're gonna write a receipt to the guy. Even without a ksuba, we're gonna write a receipt to the husband that says, I paid in full. Even without the ksuba, he will have a document that says that he paid. So if she tries to present the ksuba separately, he'll be able to present his receipt, and he won't have to pay a second time. Rav Papa says, no, we're not going to write a receipt, because it's not the husband's job to make sure that he keeps that receipt forever. It's not his job. So we're talking about, so what's the case of our Mishnah then? If there's no receipt, why aren't we afraid? So Rav Papa Amar, b'makom she'ein koisvin ksuba askinon. Here we're talking about a case where there is no ksuba. There were certain times in history, as the Gemara is going to discuss the idea that there were certain times in history where the Goyim didn't let them write ksubas, or there wasn't a minig to write a ksuba, whatever it was. There is no ksuba. So if there's no ksuba, so we don't have to worry about the fact that she's going to show up in a second bezdin and try to present a ksuba. There is no ksuba. So that's why we don't have to worry about a second bezdin, because there is no ksuba that she could present. Fine. So the Gemara says, now, but that's based on our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, Rav Papa very easily could say that there was no ksuba, because our Mishnah didn't discuss the ksuba at all, one way or another. So you could say that there was no ksuba. But there are those that learn this machlekes Rav Avuha and Rav Papa in the context of a braisa. Now this braisa clearly is discussing the case of a ksuba, because it starts right away. Ivda ksubasa. She had a ksuba. We're living in an area that writes a ksuba, and she lost it. Or hitmina ksubasa, or she hid her ksuba. Obviously the Gemara is going to explain what the difference in the cases are. Nisrafa ksubasa, or obviously this is her claim. Her claim is that her ksuba was burnt up. So then, how do you determine whether she's a psula or not? Because she needs a ksuba and she's not presenting it. Raktu lefanel, if they danced in front of her a special way, sachku lefanel, or they made jokes in front of her, again, a special way that they used to do dafka when she was a psula, heviru lefanel kaishel psura, where they had this special cup of wine, the Gemara is going to explain what that is, oi mapa shel psulim, or they actually had the sheet that proved that she was a psula. In all those cases, so again, that becomes the evidence that she was a psula. Im yeshla edim be'echad mikol elu, if she can bring edim to one of these special circumstances that we just discussed, ksubasa masayim, she is going to be able to collect her ksuba of 200. All she has to do is show up in Bezdin and says, oh yeah, there was a kaishel psura. We did a special dance. Whatever it was, then that's all you need to prove. and she'll collect her ksuba. So once again, the Gemara asks the obvious question. And maybe she'll come to Bezin with one set of Eidim on Monday, the Gavya, and she'll collect. And then she'll present her ksuba. Remember here again, we know that there was, she's claiming that it was burnt. But now she's going to show up in a second Bezin, and then all of a sudden present her ksuba, and that will be like a first case. The Gavya ba, and she'll collect the second time. So why aren't we afraid she's going to collect the second time? Why is it that we believe her simply by saying, oh yeah, I lost my ksuba? Why do we believe that argument? So Rav Avua says, no problem. The reason why we can believe the argument is because we will protect him also. If she claims she doesn't have a ksuba, we'll give him a receipt, and I'll have the receipt. And if she ever decides to pull out the ksuba, he'll pull out his receipt, and we're good to go. So Rav Papa says, I don't like relying on a receipt, as we said before, because it's not his job to keep she claims she lost it, but he's going to have to keep the receipt forever. It's not fair. So Rav Papa Omar, b'malkam shein kosin ksuba askinon. Over here we're talking about a case where there was no ksuba in the first place, and that's where she can come into Bezin without a ksuba. But if there was a ksuba, she must present the ksuba. So that's what Rav Papa says. But the problem is, how could you say that in the explanation of the Braisa? What do you mean? It says the case was she lost the ksuba, which means we are talking about a town where they do write ksubas. The Kosovla Ihu, so the answer is, right? So obviously we are talking about that there was a ksuba if she lost it. So the Gemara answers no. The Kosovla Ihu. The case was really we're talking about a town that they generally don't write a ksuba. This guy decided on his own to write a ksuba. Now that's his own problem. Now he got himself into trouble. But normally we're not worried that there's a ksuba because the history of this town is that they don't have a ksuba. So the Gemara says, okay, very good. But saif, mafkilo v'gabyabo. I understand that this town doesn't have a ksuba, but Lamaisa, she herself is admitting that she lost her ksuba. That means she's admitting that they wrote a ksuba. So why aren't we afraid that the ksuba is going to show up? So the Gemara says, you're right. My ivda ba'ur. So what we're talking about is when she says she lost it, losing it is not enough. We're talking about that she lost it through fire, or is fire. So since she lost it with fire, there's no concern, I guess she'll have to prove that she lost it with fire, there's no concern that the ksuba is going to show up a second time. Okay, so now, in other words, the ksuba is out of the picture. So, ihachi hainu nisrafo. The problem is that doesn't fit into the words of the Braitzo, because if you're telling me lost is with fire, then what is the case? Nisrafo also means it was burnt. It's the same thing. Void hitzmina mayikalamemer. And also, the Mishnah gives a case where she hid it. So again, she's not even claiming that it got burnt. She's really just saying, it's gone. She's hiding it. So obviously, there is a ksuba over here. Vesu ivda lamali. And also, what are we even saying that, what do we need the case of lost for? It's just an extra case. Once we're talking about she hid it or she burnt it or all those other cases, this case doesn't really add anything more to the concept. Ella, so obviously we have to give a different explanation to the words of the Mishnah. Ella, kol ivda, so the answer is like this. The reason why we list the case of lost, we lost the ksuba, anytime, kol ivda, anytime it says the case that she lost it, ki itmina bifanenu dami. It's the equivalent of her showing us that she's hiding it. In other words, she cannot walk into Beis Din and say, I lost it. I lost it? I don't believe it. So find it. You lost it, then find it. It's the same thing as her saying, yes, there's a ksuba, but look, I'm putting it in my back pocket so you can't see it anymore. No magic tricks aren't going to work in Beis Din. So, obviously, the loya avinu lo, and we're not going to give her anything, ad da amri eidim, until we have proof, nisrafa ksubasa, until eidim can come and say, we saw the ksuba literally being burnt. Okay. Alright, so that has to be the case over here. So what comes out like this. Rav Papa is saying, we're really, even in the Brice of Rav Papa is saying that really we're talking about a city that they don't write a ksuba. So what's this whole story? And again, the story is that she burnt it and she has proof that she burnt it and so on and so forth. Okay, so where did the ksuba come from? So the answer is, they on their own decided to write their own ksuba. But really we're talking about there is no ksuba here. So the fact that they decided to write it, now it's gone. It's as if you're back to square one. Back to square one, there is no ksuba, and therefore Beis Din is able to deal with the... So now it's just a question of, what did the ksuba say? Alright, and that's the... So So Rav Avuah says, you're right, a shaver. Rav Papa says, no, I'm not going to worry about it, because everybody knows there is no ksuba over here, and she'll just have to, we'll rely on what she says. Okay, now, so we had two versions of the same machlokes. One was just based on the Mishnah, one was based on the Braisa. So the Gemara says very simple. The one who says the Machlekes Rav Papa and Rav Avuah was based on the words of the Braisa. So it's easy to say that the Mishnah talking about this no Ksuba case. Because the Braisa was discussing Ksuba and says that it was lost. The Mishnah never discussed Ksuba at all. So it's obvious the case of the Mishnah. It's easy to explain, if this is your explanation, it's easy to explain that we're talking about that there was no Ksuba whatsoever. However, but the one, those who learned the Machlekes Rav Avuah and Rav Papa was really in the context of the Mishnah, that's so that you could say, oh, in the Mishnah's case there was no Ksuba. Avo Braisa loy, but in the case of the Braisa, we can't say there was no Ksuba, Kikoshio, based on the questions that we had asked, that why aren't we afraid that she's going to come into a second Bezdin and present her Ksuba? Because the case of the Braisa clearly is that there was a Ksuba over here. And she claims that she lost it. That's not a good enough argument. She'll pull it out later and then make a second claim. Okay, fine. So that's just, again, an explanation of where, of exactly what the context is. We all agree at the end of the day. At the end of the day, Rav Avuah suggests you give a receipt, and Rav Papa says, if we're talking about that there is, they don't write a ksuba, if there is no ksuba, Rav Papa says we're going to let it go through, because, and we don't require a receipt, because we'll know that if there's no ksuba, then we have to question, is this the first time they're in Beis Din? But if there is a ksuba, according to Rav Papa, then you're not going to give her anything. Because if you give her something now without a ksuba, there's always a concern that later she'll show up and pull out a ksuba. She'll have to prove that there is no ksuba in order for her to be able to collect. Because as long as there is no proof, she might collect with it. The Gemara quotes in Yesh Edim, if there are Edim, we believe the Edim to say that she really was a psula, and we're going to have to pay the full amount. So now finally the Gemara says, what kind of proof is this? V'leichosh dilma mafkeh eid hinuma b'hai beidin. Once again, if we're talking about that we're just relying on what she says and we're relying on the Edim. So till now we're saying, okay, if there are no Edim, one way or another, she'll collect the second time. So once again, the Gemara says, "V'leichosh dilma mafkeh eid hinuma b'hai beidin v'gavya." Why aren't we afraid? Like we said before, the same question. And now we're talking about no ksuba. On the top of the Omer, we were talking about where there was a ksuba, and we're worried she's going to present it a second time. But now we're saying there's no ksuba, and she's going to come to Beis Din, and basically, the Gemara is asking the kasha that you've been asking all along. She's going to come to Beis Din with her proof that she had an hinuma, and she'll collect. So, and then she'll come to Beis Din a second time with the same Edim or different Edim that saw her wear this object, and she'll collect the second time. So the Gemara finally admits, and this is the answer to the Yerkasha, b'mokam deloy efsher vaday koisvin shoyvin. If we're talking about a situation where there really is a concern that she's going to come to Beis Din a second time, we have no choice but to give the guy a receipt. And yes, we really prefer not to make it his responsibility, but over here, she could just, because she has the liberty and the flexibility to walk in and do this over and over and over again, we have no choice but to give the guy a receipt. And even though we don't write a receipt, generally, but if there's a concern that she can just walk into Bezin with Aiden and collect the second time, now she's bringing Aiden. So there already, we're gonna have to write a shaver. We have no way out of it. Okay, then remember we listed in the Braisa that one of the ways we prove that she is a Besula is they used to do certain things by the Chasana. They used to give her, pass this cup of wine, a special cup of wine. So the Gemara asks, "My Koishel Besura, what is this cup of wine that we're discussing?" Amar Rav Ada Bar Ahava, Kois Yayin Shel Truma. They used to pass around a cup that the cup itself was filled with wine that was made out of truma, which means it's tahar, and only a kohen is eating it. Mavir and Lefanel, that they would pass this in front of the kala, kloimar, and as if to say, what was the significance of this cup of wine? Ru'uya ha'isazu le'echol bitruma. What we're saying is, this girl could have married a kohen. By the fact, because a basula, you have to be a basula, you can't be a grusha in order to marry a kohen. So it must be that this is her first marriage. By the fact that we're passing around this type of cup of wine, must be that's proof that we would only do this if she was a psula, because we're saying that she could have married a kohen. However, the Gemara asks, I think, the obvious question. Maskeflo Rav Papa. So Rav Papa asks, Atu almana miloi achla betruma. She could also be an almana. It doesn't prove any. The fact that it's truma, she could still be an almana and still be allowed to eat truma. So what does this prove? How does this prove that she's a basula per se? Ella Amar Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says, what we say is like this. Zu reishis ketruma. Racist. Either you are gairus or you're not gairus, the word. Okay, fine. What we're saying is like this. This is the first time. You're right. It's not because she's able to eat truma. There are many circumstances that you could eat truma. But rather we're saying she's the cream of the crop. That's really what we're saying. Just like truma is the special part, the first part, so too, and that's the first separation that you take from the food is truma, so too, she also, this is her first incident. This is her first circumstances. So therefore, that's obvious. Again, it's just symbolism anyway. So the symbolism is, this is her first time. And therefore, that proves that she's a psula. Okay, then the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Oimer. Rabbi Yehuda has a slightly different version of it wasn't just one cup of wine, but rather, Chavas Shel Yayim Mavirin Lefanel. They used to bring not just a cup of wine, but a whole barrel. They used to bring a whole barrel in front of, as part of the process. So Amar Avada Barahava, so that, basically our concept of an open bar, right? They used to bring a whole barrel of wine to the Chasen. So Amar Avada Barahava Besula, so the way they used to do it is as follows. Besula Mavirin Lefanel Stuma. If the girl was a psula, they used to bring a closed barrel of wine. Just like she's closed, the barrel of wine is closed. But if the girl, this wasn't her first marriage, they would bring an open barrel of wine. Okay, so that was a very clear way to distinguish between a basula and a ba'ula. So the Gemara asks, I don't understand, Amai. Right, okay, so the Gemara says like this. Alright, so we said that for a basula it's closed and for a ba'ula it's open. So the Gemara says, Amai, why do you need to do both? Neved kame basula, why don't we just bring a barrel of wine when we're dealing with the basula? The kame ba'ula, loy neved klal, and just do nothing. It's much easier instead of making this subtle difference between the basula and the ba'ula, why don't we just do it for one and not for the other? So the Gemara answers, I'll tell you why. Because zimnin de tafsa masayim, because there might be a situation where ultimately she'll take 200 zuz again later when she gets divorced. Va'amra ana basula hava. And she'll say, no, I really was a basula and I really deserve the 200. You can't take it back. Bahaydaloi avru kamoi. And you'll ask me, oh, so where was my barrel of wine? Et nusi hu de et nisu. You say, it was an accident. There was no wine available. There were no barrels available. So it was just, it wasn't my fault. It was a special circumstance that we didn't have a barrel of wine. So she'll always be able to make the argument, because who says that by every chasana you're going to have a barrel of wine? So she'll always be able to make that argument. However, if there was a barrel of wine and we can identify what that barrel of wine was, she can't make an argument. She can't say, if the barrel of wine was empty, she can't say, oh, I was really a basula, they accidentally opened up the barrel of wine. It's not the way, and nobody's going to believe that argument. So therefore, if we do something for each, we do, for a basula, we do an act, and for a ba'ula, we do a specific act, then you have to identify what that act was, because there's a very clear indication in that act. As opposed to if you do nothing, you could always say, yeah, they meant to do it, and they didn't do it, so, you know, you can't prove one way or the other. But by now that they did something, and now you have to prove what that something was, that will be a 100% proof of whether she was a basula or not. Okay, we'll stop over here.